Welcome back, everybody. Make sure you guys check us out on The Valley Outdoors. And where else, Ava? Facebook.
Facebook.
What? You're just, are you like verklempt over there or what?
No, I just almost had a heart attack because the music bed, I wasn't sure I had our mics on, and it's it's been a process.
There's a lot going on in your world, is what you're saying.
My heart stopped, and that's why I looked at. I'm like, oh my gosh, nope, we're good to go.
You guys only knew the back, what goes on behind the scenes sometimes here.
We're all professionals.
Chaos at its finest, I have to admit.
Yep.
But it's a controlled chaos.
It is.
You know.
Thank goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And thank goodness that you have some tips for us.
Nice segue.
Thanks.
Oh, well done. Well done. So we're going to talk, before we jump into some of the other cool stories that I was teasing, I've got 12 pro tips for staying warm in the outdoors, since I think apparently across the Midwest, winter is now here.
It is.
Or soon to be for everybody. And these tips come from the past field editor for Backpacker Magazine. And he's been camping in and using the outdoors in various temperatures from who knows what warmth to crazy, crazy cold. And so they're well-founded tips.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Number one, move.
Oh.
Well, that makes sense, right? Clothing does not produce heat. It only helps trap the heat that your body produces. Anytime you get cold, best strategy to rewarm is start moving or increasing your pace. And when children start to have signs that they're cold, they have less body fat and mass, they cool off more quickly than adults. When you take a break, make it short to avoid cooling off. If somebody has visibly cooled off faster than others during a break, having that person start moving ahead of the group, you'll regroup before long. Moving.
Got it. I like that.
Pace yourself. Minimizing how much you perspire in cold temperatures. Like we talk about deer hunting.
Yep.
If you're going to go out and you're going to work up a sweat,
you don't want to do that.
Worst thing you want to do is start sweating, because it changes everything. If sweating is unavoidable because of your activity level, there may be still moments when that level drops, such as transition from moving uphill to downhill. Try and smooth out the transition by slowing the pace in which you stop or reduce your sweating, but still generate enough heat to at least begin drying your base layers. Number three, adjust your layers. Sometimes whether you're climbing uphill on backcountry skis or snowshoes or even high exertion like running or Nordic skiing, it is possible to avoid sweating. And seriously, when you layer, having a poly layer that wicks is super important.
Mm-hmm.
Having something that is not going to matter if it gets wet, like a wool, a good wool. Those two elements, if you have those, you're going to be good. And you should be just fine. And of course, waterproof, breathable layers are also an important aspect of that. So important points and pieces to keep you warmer. Eat more. I had no problem with that. I can't even on that. When your body needs more fuel and freezing temperatures to keep your internal furnace burning, when you're out for more than about 2 hours.
Bring food with you.
Eat high-fat snacks such as chocolate, cheese, and nuts, because fat is a slow-burning fuel that keeps your body going for the long haul, which becomes even more important in the cold. Keep those snacks handy and refuel frequently. Perfect. Drink up. In cold, dry conditions, typically winter, you become dehydrated more quickly. And this is extremely important in altitude. I couldn't believe how fast you become dehydrated. You can drink 4 or 5 bottles of water before we start skiing in a given day in the morning. And you think, okay, I'm going to have to
use the restroom,
go to the bathroom. And nope.
No.
Amazingly enough, don't need it. That was number 5. Number 6, don't freeze your water. Use a hydration bladder in temperatures down to mid-20s. Colder temps, the hose will likely freeze in those particular bladder bags, so be careful of that. And double wall bottles like a Hydro Flask will work as well. Carry spare gloves.
Okay.
That's a big thing. Kind of reminds me of Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, no. Okay, moving on.
You had gloves? If your fingers get cold easily, And do they become difficult to rewarm? Carry two pairs of gloves. Keep the second pair in a zippered or secured jacket pocket so your body heat keeps them toasty. So keep them pre-warmed. Bring two hats. Any outing which exertion level of the temperature will vary. Two hats is important, obviously. One dry, one when you're sweating. Pre-warm your gloves and boots. Big deal there. If you're starting out cold, it's tough. You guys have to warm up the boot, and that makes it difficult. Skiing, I've got a heated boot bag. That is awesome. Really a good thing to start out that way. And they also have the heated gloves that I've experimented with. And in the last 3 years, the heated gloves have been absolutely incredible. I am blown away. And the heated socks.
Yep.
So
I got those for hunting.
No joke. When it gets to be that 5 to 8 degrees and below that, they are a, they're a gem. Absolute gem. Number 10, dress like a goose.
I like these tips.
If you stop more than a few minutes, put on a fat down or a synthetic insulation jacket immediately to prevent your body from cooling off.
Got it.
Take it off right before you start moving again so you don't overheat. Only two left. Number 11, sit on your pack. If you're not going to be wanting to sit on the ground, rocks, logs, and other natural objects, they are all frozen. And if you do sit down, your body, it will suck the heat right out of you. So by the thermal conduction, and that's not a good thing. Last but not least, worship the sun. Just as you would seek shade when taking a break on a hot day and cold temperatures, take a rest stop in warm sunshine, face into the sun. Ideally, find a spot that's sheltered from the wind and keep your back to it. Keep in mind when you're planning a trip in advance, especially when taking a few new people to the outdoor winter activities, that you can improve the chances of enjoying it by taking them out in March or early spring. Sun's the warmest at that point and does help a lot.
Yeah, actually, like the intensity of the sun in the spring is the same as summertime.
Yeah. It actually works pretty good. I know it's a, you can actually get sunburned in.
Yes, you can.
In spring. So that makes a little bit of a difference. But jumping on to an odd story you talked about before the break. Positive testing on Brainerd area deer is extending the CWD management into 2024.
Oh, geez. Great.
Yeah. Newly discovered instance of chronic wasting disease in the Brainerd Lakes area will result in 3 more years of sampling and other disease management efforts in that area. In addition, following the confirmation in late October, an area near the North Dakota border, the DNR will expand its deer feeding and attractant ban to include most of northwestern Minnesota. Yuck. These are precautionary measures, but necessary measures. And the continued sampling shows us to monitor the extent of CWD in the Brainerd area. Expanding the feeding ban around the Climax and Bemidji eliminates one layer of controllable risk associated with the concentration of wild deer at food placed by humans. One of the 1,234 deer that harvested this far in the fall in that the permit area, 604 tested positive of the 1,200, which is
not good.
Crazy. The area stretches north from Brainerd to Pine River, eastward to Aiken, and that initial discovery in wild deer came after testing in 2016 revealed that a deer farm within the permit area 604 was infected with CWD, which is, here we go again.
Right.
Like us, area residents and hunters were optimistic that deer management would return to normal. Unfortunate, but this discovery resets the clock, and CWD management measures will remain in place through at least the fall of 2024. With nearly 15,000 wild deer in the area tested since 2017, only two positives were found. The DNR is confident CWD is not prevalent and widespread in this area's wild deer population, but continued testing also will help reduce the risk and spread of CWD. I don't know. That the story continues on. feeding bands and attractant bands are part of the DNR's CWD response plan and necessary because the feed and attractants often cause deer to concentrate, greatly increasing the risk to deer-to-deer transmission of the disease. The Southwest area, CWD testing of 4,705 deer revealed 17 new cases of CWD. All deer that tested positive were harvested in locations near areas where the disease was previously detected, so no news there, which is good news, bad news, right?
Right.
It hasn't changed. And the growth or prevalence remains to be low, less than 1% in both areas where the disease appeared and is persisting in the wild deer population. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, thankfully, you know, the numbers are low, but it's also, you know, it'd just be great if it wasn't an issue.
Yeah. In the Brainerd area, 1,234 deer were tested so far. A single 1.5-year-old male tested positive, so granted, it's still there. South Metro, testing in CWD in two of the 1,063 deer sampled, they found, and just two. So it's still there. So I don't know. It becomes a question of where is it coming from, how is it perpetuated, and what are we going to do to reduce that? So, yeah, stay tuned. We'll have more on it. I know that much, but we'll be right back. We've got some more stories coming up, and Fish and Wildlife in Montana is being sued.
Oh, no.
Stay tuned for that. We're going to get right back. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Ava, it's kind of nice to have a little snow. I like it.
I do too. Makes it feel like the holidays.
Except the plowing and the driving.
Yeah. But, you know, when it's cold and it's brown and there's no snow, I'm like, why don't you just cover it up? Cover it up with pretty white stuff. And
as long as we need to have regular occurrences to keep it white.
Yeah, because the plows make it so dirty too on the roads. Yeah.
Salt and, yeah. Totally agree. So I talked a little bit about a little story earlier before right at the head of the show about unmanned surface vessels that are scanning the lakes in Michigan and Huron. I thought this was kind of a unique story. A pair of 15-foot high USVs are plying the waters of Lake Michigan and Huron to help the DNR track commercially imported fish populations.
Okay.
And that makes sure we understand commercially important fish populations. So it kind of triggered my mind. How's that work? Okay. Well, in this particular article says, while I don't pretend to have much, if any, influence on activities and programs of the Michigan DNR, perhaps that I've touched them a little. More likely, it's absolutely coincidental that I wrote a blog for the Michigan Outdoor News back in 2018 suggesting sail drones could be utilized to survey and quantify fish populations in the Great Lakes. Regardless of whether it had anything to do with that project or not, a pair of sail drones are now sailing around the lakes Michigan and Huron, surveying the commercially important fish populations for the DNR. A sail drone is a USV, so it's actually a sailboat. No joke. It's a 15-foot high mast sailboat. It's
all right, sailboat. Cool.
Yeah. Unmanned.
Yeah.
And in this case, wandering the waters. They are not just drifting aimlessly with the wind and waves, however. Using predominantly wind and solar power, the USVs are coursing about the lakes on a pre-planned route using onboard GPS technology. So they're actually a route set, so they follow it based on that,
okay,
which is kind of cool. Starting in Holland, Michigan, their travels will have the drones coursing through Lake Michigan first, then crossing through the Straits of Mackinac, and finishing their journey in Lake Huron. Each of the two sail drones is fitted with an advanced sonar gear to scan the depths below each of the fishing boats to record the fish seen under the boats. These records will be examined and analyzed by trained technicians to help determine the location and population density of important commercial fish populations. Similar to programs that have been conducted by previously manned vessels, but the drones could do far more at much less expense. It is expensive for the DNR to operate a manned vehicle just from the cost of the fuel and manpower. And manned voyages are scheduled with humans' needs in mind. They can't run 24/7 with weeks on end.
Right.
Sail drones, no problem. They've been used for a variety of missions over the last decades all over the world. Map surface current currents, underwater topography, climate analysis, and times.
So. Right. And constantly, too, like they
exactly.
said.
Exactly. Hopefully, the information will better assess the effects of commercial fishing on target and non-target species in the lakes. If the USVs produce the expected data for commercial fish monitoring, perhaps the management teams keeping track of the important recreational fisheries in Michigan's Great Lakes will be able to put sail drones to work with increased accuracy to modernize their assessment work in the future. I know in Lake Erie, on the commercial scenarios there, they had a lot of Canadian boats that would come down and net and harvest at the same time. And that was a little controversial because it's not like the fish stay in the Canadian side.
Right.
They do have a tendency to move across mm-hmm. the border. Some of them, of course, probably say A right before they bite your bait, but you don't know that.
Yeah.
You don't know
right.
depending on which side you're on. I know it's a bad Canadian joke, but sometimes you got to do that. Thanks for joining us, everybody. The show goes by so quick. It's like here and then gone.
Yep.
I hope you guys have a great weekend. I know I'm going to. Ava, you as well. And for Don, who's not here, we are the Valley Outdoors. And we'll be listening to you or hearing from you guys maybe next week when we're on. All right. We're the Valley Outdoors, and we're out.